The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 402 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. Great to have you aboard. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes, and you can follow me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. Always love to get your feedback there. I'm on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. I'm in a better mood today than last Monday. Last week, we were shoveling out. This week, temperatures are warming up. It's over 50 degrees, and I'm a happy camper. After 4 years at Syracuse University, I've seen enough snow for a lifetime. Super Bowl week is finally here. I'll preview the big game coming up. Will it be Cam Newton and the Panthers or Peyton Manning and the Broncos? My prediction, and you may disagree, is on the way. You knew it was coming, right? With Cam Newton in Super Bowl 50, you knew the black quarterback issue was going to pop up, and it did. My take on that. Plus, we have the Pro Bowl and the NHL All-Star game to discuss. The Pro Bowl turned into a game of two-hand touch. Just another debacle late in that game. The NHL went with a new format, but everybody talking about John Scott, the journeyman turned MVP. What a story. Good for him sticking it to Gary Bettman and the National Hockey League. We'll get into that. And something that always gets our attention in the world of sports is a big upset. We all love the upset. Unless you had the favorite, of course. We had one this weekend down under. We'll get to the Australian Open and what happened to Serena Williams. Stay tuned for that. And also a near monumental upset in the NBA. Warriors Sixers. I'll talk about that as well. It's all coming up on episode number 402 of the Sports Report podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Spread the word. New shows every Monday. 30 to 40 minutes, fast-paced, high energy, funny, informative, entertaining. At least we hope so. Probably not, but hey, you give it a shot, right? And I'm on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. Whether you agree, disagree, you can always weigh in on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. Super Bowl 50 is set Sunday at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara. Seems like everyone is taking Carolina. The line has gone up to 6. Why? Very simple. The public loves the Panthers. Public doesn't like the Panthers. The public loves the Panthers. At the William Hill Sportsbook in Las Vegas, 87% of the bets on the point spread and 94% of the total money wagered were on the Panthers. That was as of the middle of last week. At Wynn and Encore, 80% of the early money was on Carolina. These are big-time percentages. 87, 94, 80%. Early money, all showing the public loves Carolina. And one thing I know, whether it's gambling in blackjack, roulette, craps, sports, whatever, the house almost always wins. There's a reason the lights never go out in Las Vegas. It's open 24/7, 365. Why? Because the house usually wins. Which is why I am a firm believer, and we've discussed this before, the old opposite theory. If everybody is going one way, you should probably go in the other direction. So I'll get right to it. I am picking Carolina to win, but, and this is a Fat Albert-sized but, I am taking Denver with the 6 points. And by kickoff, maybe it's up to 6.5, and I'd be even happier. The average Joe sports fan seems to think that another 43-8 rout is coming, like 2 years ago when Seattle took Denver behind the woodshed. And there is nothing worse, in my opinion, than a Super Bowl blowout. Because I'm there for the game. I'm not there for the commercials. They can be funny, they can make you laugh, and they probably should for the millions of dollars that they cost just to get 30 seconds of airtime. I mean, if you botch that commercial, you should probably get a pink slip and looking for a new job. I can't see you doing real well in the next board meeting if you hear that your idea for a Super Bowl commercial that cost millions of dollars flopped. Anywho, I'm not there for the food. I'm there for the game. I mean, you wait all season for the Super Bowl. When it gets there, especially if I don't have a horse in the race, and I'm not a fan of Denver or Carolina, I just want to see a good game, just like the AFC Championship game. I'm not a Patriots fan. I have a lot of respect for that organization and Tom Brady and Belichick, but I just wanted to see a close game, and we got a dandy. That's what I'm looking for in the Super Bowl. I don't want 43-8. Not what I want. But it seems like the public feels that that type of game is coming. I don't see that happening. I have too much respect for the Broncos defense, which is ranked number one in the National Football League. Wade Phillips is the defensive coordinator. He's one of those guys that I just think is better suited to be a coordinator than a head coach. And there are others. Norv Turner comes to mind right away. Ray Rhodes, who was a defensive coordinator for the 49ers and the Packers. Then he became the head coach of the Eagles and then head coach of the Packers for a season. He's another guy. There are certain coaches, I think they're better in the seat next to the guy. You know, one spot over. And that one spot makes a huge difference from being the man to being the guy next to the man. I think, you know, that's the same for Wade Phillips. Very good as a coordinator, and he's running this defense. Any squad that can go out there and hold Brady and Gronkowski and Edelman and Amendola to 18 points, any team that can do that, I have a ton of respect for. Brady in the AFC Championship game, 27 of 56. How many times do you see this guy completing under 50% of his passes? One touchdown, two interceptions. And one of New England's touchdowns came on a short field. It was a 22-yard drive after a Denver turnover, that backward pass that Ronnie Hillman just decided to take a snooze on, just decided to take a nap and quit on the play. And that set up the Patriots for one of their touchdowns. The Broncos harassed Tom Brady all day long. They had four sacks. They could have had a lot more. He threw a lot of passes away late as he was getting wrapped up and about to be sacked. Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, Derek Wolfe, Malik Jackson, they were constantly pressuring him. Miller and Ware are household names for the most part. They combined for 18 and a half sacks this season. I think Wolfe and Jackson are underrated players and will be important in this game. Wolfe had 5.5 sacks this season, and Jackson led Denver in tackles for loss. You don't hear about them as much, but they're significant players. And then you go to the secondary. You have Aqib Talib, who's a very physical corner, and you also have Chris Harris. So that's a real nice combination there. We know the NFL is a passing league, although Carolina is one of the few teams, Minnesota another, that really likes to run the football. But you have Talib and you have Harris, so you have two really good corners, and that is a premier position in the NFL. I'm not in love with Carolina's wide receivers. You know, it's funny. Sometimes we become a prisoner of the moment. You see all the points Carolina's putting up the past couple weeks. But remember the dialogue surrounding Carolina and the offense for the vast majority of the season. It was, they have Cam Newton, and they have a good tight end in Greg Olsen. But then what? The wide receiving core just isn't there. It's not great. Kelvin Benjamin out of Florida State, who's a good young receiver, unfortunately was injured and hasn't played. He's a big physical target in the red zone, but he's been out. Ted Ginn Jr. can fly. We all know that. He's got tremendous speed. He's one of those guys you have to make sure your safety has some help deep. But he only had 44 catches all season long. Jericho Cotchery, Devin Funchess, Corey Brown, these are not game-breaking wide receivers. I admit Greg Olsen is a stud at tight end. He had 77 catches. He had 7 touchdowns. I had him on one of my fantasy football teams, so I know how good he is. And after seeing what Gronk did to Denver, 8 catches, 144 yards and a touchdown, that is a scary matchup for the Broncos. But Carolina had the number 24 passing offense. They are a run-first team, 143 rushing yards per game. That is the second most in the league. And it helps to have a quarterback like Cam Newton, who ran for 636 yards, almost 5 yards a carry. He has really improved, much more on him coming up, both on and off the field. His quarterback rating was 99 this year. And I know the Panthers put up 80 combined points in their playoff games, but Seattle and Arizona made a lot of mistakes. Carson Palmer was not good against Green Bay, and I didn't think he was good against Carolina either. While Peyton Manning isn't what he once was, and you look in the numbers and, you know, they stick out like a sore thumb, 9 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. Talking about Peyton Manning, 17 picks. But he's still extremely smart. He can audible out of bad plays. He can check to a run, or he can just throw it away. You don't try to do too much. In their wins over Pittsburgh and New England, Peyton did not make mistakes, did not have that killer turnover. And I don't expect Denver to score much. They only put up 20 points against New England. They had 23 against the Steelers in their playoff game. The Broncos are 16th in total offense. They are 19th in points at just 22 points per game. Yet they're in the Super Bowl. Why? Because of the defense. My prediction coming up, stay tuned. But first I have to tell you about our great sponsor, and that is iHome. From the portable color-changing IBT-74 to the 100% waterproof IBN6, iHome has all of your Bluetooth needs covered. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, yes, wireless, that's the way to go, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality, and that is a winning combination. iHome also offers a full line of quality headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru, if you like going to the gym, for the traveler, or just for hanging out at home and relaxing. Go to iHomeAudio.com, look at all of their great products. You can check out their apps and their accessories as well. iHome is the number one brand in digital speakers. iHomeAudio.com, that's the website. The sound quality cannot be beat. And take a look at the IBT-74 and the IBN-6. All of their products, again, at iHomeAudio.com. We're back on episode number 402 of the Sports Report. My big Super Bowl preview, breaking down Super Bowl number 50, which is coming up Sunday night at Levi's Stadium. So we're talking about the offenses here. And again, I don't expect Denver to light up the scoreboard. That's not how they've been winning. But I also don't see Carolina going up and down the field on this number one ranked Denver defense. I see a more low scoring game than most. Carolina has a great defense too. Got to tip your cap. Number 6 overall. The Panthers hold opponents to 19 points per game. They've got Kawan Short up front on that defensive line. They've got Kuechly and Davis at linebacker. And hopefully Davis can play. He's a veteran. He's been through so much. One knee surgery after another after another. Now he breaks his right forearm. So he's got about a dozen screws in there. I hope he can go. you know, finally gets a chance here to play in the Super Bowl. And you want to see teams at full strength. You don't want anybody to throw out injuries as an excuse. And then in the secondary, the back end, you have Josh Norman at corner. So Carolina has stars at all three levels. And when I'm analyzing a defense, that's what I'm looking at. Because if you only have a great secondary, teams can run the ball on you. And if you only have a great defensive line, well, they can attack you through the air. So you have to look at all spots. And with Short up front and Kuechly and Davis, a linebacker, I mean, Kuechly and J.J. Watt, probably the two best defensive players in the game. And then you have Josh Norman at corner. He's a Pro Bowl player. So they have studs at all three levels. I do like Denver's receivers more than Carolina's. Demaryius Thomas, now he does have a case of the dropsies from time to time, but he still had 105 catches. Emmanuel Sanders had 76 catches. They each had 6 touchdowns. Neither team has an elite running back, if you're looking at that position. We're talking about Jonathan Stewart for the Panthers, Ronnie Hillman, C.J. Anderson for the Broncos. Hillman was at just 4.2 yards a carry this season. Yes, Carolina leads the NFL in points at 31 per game. And that is a big, big number. And I know they are red hot right now. But remember, everyone loved who going into the AFC Championship game? The Patriots. That's right. Everybody was taking Brady, Belichick, and New England, and Denver won the game and held them under 20 points. So sometimes, just like in baseball, you have to go oppo, right? If you're a right-handed hitter, you got to take that pitch out to right center field. You can't be pulling anything. So I'm going with the opposite theory here. Give me the 6 points. The line has been inflated. And I'm going to call it Carolina 23, Denver 20. So I do have the Panthers to win, but I think it's too many points. And I think Denver covers. 23-20, Carolina over Denver in Super Bowl 50. I just think it's too many points, especially going up against a defense like the Denver Broncos. Let me know what you're thinking. And even though Peyton Manning isn't putting up the numbers that he once did in these playoff games, you know, I know he had one playoff game, only 175 yards passing. They had under 250 total yards in their last game, the AFC Championship against New England. But he doesn't make the killer mistake. At least he hasn't since he came back from the injury. So I'm going to rely on that. A veteran quarterback, smart quarterback, one of the smartest quarterbacks ever to play the game, one of the best quarterbacks ever to play the game, and a number one ranked defense. And I just think 6 points is too much. So I'm going to go Carolina 23, Denver 20. Panthers to win outright, but the Broncos to cover. Let me know what you're thinking. Predictions always welcome. Get them in now. I'm on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. That's the handle for the Sports Report podcast on Twitter at the Sports RPT. This is episode number 402. Thanks so much for listening. Spread the word to all your friends, your family members, your relatives, your coworkers, the strange-looking guy down the corner who you don't talk to ever. Even him, if he likes sports. Tell him about this show on grizzlyproductions.tv. You can call it The Grizz or in the podcast section of iTunes. All right, let's get to Cam Newton here, because last week, and again, I'm not surprised at all. This was very predictable that this was going to come up. You heard about the black quarterback, and I'm not sure why in 2016 some people are so concerned with this topic, but they are. I mean, we've seen Doug Williams and Donovan McNabb and Russell Wilson all in the Super Bowl. Warren Moon was playing quarterback in the NFL in the mid-80s. I'm talking over 30 years ago. Randall Cunningham's rookie year with the Eagles was 1985. It's not like we haven't seen a black quarterback before. Newton was asked why he's such a lightning rod for controversy and criticism, and he replied, quote, "I'm an African-American quarterback. That may scare a lot of people because they haven't seen nothing that they can compare me to. To be honest, when Newton first came into the league, I was not a fan. I thought he was immature. I did not think he was a leader. Far from it. I did not think he was a real good teammate. You saw some of those press conferences where he's pouting after the game. He didn't show maturity. And on the field, I thought he threw too many interceptions, and I didn't think he was an accurate enough pocket passer, which is so important in the National Football League. Other guys have had big arms, but when you're down to 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, you need to be able to squeeze the ball in there, and he's better at that. He's still not the best. It's right around 60%. But he's improved, and he cut down the interceptions. Now, I have no problem with Cam Newton at all. He's grown up. He's having a lot of fun out there. And you can't argue with his success on the field. 35 touchdown passes, 10 interceptions. I talked earlier about what the guy can do with his legs, running the football. He's at almost 5 yards a carry, so he's dangerous there. And he's a load. I mean, he is a big dude. So even if you get to him, you have to be able to bring him down. He's the type of quarterback that you really need to gang tackle. If you go one-on-one, especially if you're talking about somebody in the secondary, you know, an undersized corner coming up, good luck trying to stop him. I also love Tolbert, by the way, the fullback. How big is that dude? I mean, I can't imagine that he goes real heavy on the salad with the fat-free dressing. Can you? I mean, that guy is a powerful running back. A lot of teams nowadays, they don't even have a fullback on the roster. Tolbert, he's like a bowling ball there. Just bouncing off tacklers when they get in short yardage situations. Now, one thing about Cam Newton's comment, I don't know why he said that, you know, people can't compare him to anyone. I know he's bigger than Randall Cunningham, but Randall Cunningham had a cannon for an arm. I mean, he had one of the strongest arms you'll ever see. He could flat out wing it. Mechanics weren't great. Did not have a great concept of the offense, but he was just talking arm strength, and certainly he was mobile. I mean, you know, they dubbed him the ultimate weapon. So I could see some comparisons there. So that part I don't know that I agree with, but I thought the media, and again, you could see it coming a million miles away. It was very predictable that this black quarterback thing was going to come up. It's 2016 now. Really? So again, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it. In fact, I'm moving on right now, but I just wanted to address that a little bit. Let's get to the Pro Bowl, and then we'll talk about the NHL All-Star Game. Michael Irvin, Jerry Rice, they were the captains, so they picked the teams, and Team Irvin won 49-27. I think Michael Irvin was much, much, much more into the game than a lot of the players Sunday night at the Pro Bowl over in Hawaii. Russell Wilson was the offensive MVP. He threw for $164, 3 touchdowns. His teammate in Seattle, Michael Bennett, was the defensive MVP. Team Rice's quarterbacks, talking about Eli Manning, Derek Carr, and Tyrod Taylor, they had a rough game. They threw 6 interceptions. This is supposed to be the Pro Bowl. 6 interceptions? Man, oh man, oh man. By the end of the game, though, and we have to address this, players were not even tackling each other. Maybe you didn't watch this. Maybe you were watching Grease live instead. But it literally was two-hand touch. I mean, the defenders would come up to the running backs, the receivers, whoever had the ball, and they would just wrap them up, just put their hands around them, and then the officials would blow the whistle. The play was over. They weren't even tackling them to the ground. It was like a 7-on-7 scrimmage. I mean, all they were missing were flags out there. They could have played flag football. A record 47 players, by the way, declined to play in this year's Pro Bowl. 47. Now, part of that includes the guys who made the Super Bowl. And obviously, they're not going to play. But still, almost 50 players said, nope, not going to play. Even Mike Tirico and John Gruden, who had the call of the game on ESPN, even they were questioning the purpose of this game and what it means anymore. And if you're going to see that type of effort, you know, remember when fans were booing because there was no hitting in the first quarter. And now you have this going on. I mean, you know, maybe you just move on to something else, like a skills competition, a 40-yard dash, a bench press, an obstacle course, something like that. Or just have the receivers, you know, make spectacular catches. Did you see the footage of Odell Beckham Jr. with all those one-handed catches? And then Gruden chimed in and said, I'd like to see those without the gloves on. I mean, these gloves, unbelievable. The type of stick-em on there. But your thoughts on the Pro Bowl, and should they continue to play this, or should we just call it a day and end this thing? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT on Twitter. To the ice, the Pacific Division beat the Atlantic Division 1-0 in the championship of the NHL All-Star Game. New format this year where they broke it down by division. And they had a couple of rounds. They had your semifinals and then your championship game. It was 3-on-3. So you would expect a ton of goals, right? But in the championship, it was 1-0. I was okay with the new format. I understand why they want to change it up. You know, just like the Pro Bowl and the NBA All-Star Game, the NHL All-Star Game used to have no defense. You'd have a bazillion goals scored. I mean, that's all it was. Shot after shot after shot. So they decided to switch it up. They put $1 million on the line and went with a 3-on-3 tournament. But the story of the weekend was John Scott, who is a journeyman player. A lot of you may not even know about this guy. You probably do now. He was trending on Twitter. He is a 6'8 enforcer. He's really a fourth line player. And now he's not even in the NHL. You heard me right. The guy who won MVP in the NHL All-Star Game is not playing in the National Hockey League right now. He had 5 goals his entire career. Last night, he scored twice during the tournament. He was voted into the game by a fan campaign, and it was a little bit of a joke, a gag. You know, they got this campaign started, everybody vote for John Scott. Next thing you know, he's the captain on the Pacific Division team because he got so many votes. And even he came out and said, listen, I don't deserve to be an all-star. I'm not an all-star caliber player. Why don't you vote for some of my teammates? He was on the Arizona Coyotes. And then in the middle of January, they traded him to Montreal. While the Canadiens shipped him down to the AHL, the American Hockey League, which is like the AAA version of hockey. He was playing in Newfoundland, right? So not even in the league. And what really got him angry, initially I don't think he was angry, but he wrote an essay in the Players Tribune, which is the website that Derek Jeter started where players can write about different things that are happening in their career. So he wrote an essay in the Players Tribune, and he revealed that someone from the NHL, an NHL official, had called him and said, quote, do you think this is something your kids would be proud of? And that's when John Scott really lost it, got fired up, and got angry, because his belief was, hey, who are these guys to tell me what my kids should think of me, or whether my kids should be proud of me? So he said, the heck with everything, I'm playing. I'm going. I was voted in, and he was there. And he ends up scoring 2 goals, and he was the MVP as a write-in candidate. So congratulations to John Scott. It was the best part of this All-Star game. And how about when he dropped the gloves too with Patrick Kane? They faked like they were going to fight. I mean, that was funny. Gary Bettman took the big check out there. That had to be an awkward moment. And speaking of the commissioner, Bettman and everyone in the NHL league office, they should have been more concerned with the game time for that All-Star game than John Scott. That championship game, if you're running the NHL, you have to make sure your championship game is over before the Pro Bowl. And I know it's just the Pro Bowl, but you don't want to go head-to-head hockey NFL. Look at the ratings, okay? It's apples and oranges. And it's not even apples and oranges. It's apples and double fudge chocolate cake. All right, that's the comparison. There is none. The NFL blows them away. So the NHL should have made sure that they start early enough, start an hour earlier, so your game is over before the Pro Bowl. Because even though the Pro Bowl is a joke, we know how we're, you know, starving for football in this country. And a lot of people, I'm sure, flipped over. So that's what Bettman should be concerned about, not John Scott. But what a story. I thought it was great. Anaheim's Corey Perry scored the only goal in the championship game. That's right, an all-star game that was a defensive battle, 1-0. But the goalies made some great, great saves. John Quick was out there for the Pacific Division. And I didn't have a problem with the format. So that's the latest on the Pro Bowl, the NHL All-Star Game. You can comment. Your take is welcome on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT on Twitter. Finally to tennis here on episode number 402. Raise your hand if you knew who Angelique Kerber was before the Australian Open. I didn't think so, but you do now. Kerber upset number one ranked Serena Williams 6-4, 3-6, 6-4 in the Australian Open final. This was an absolute stunner. Serena had not dropped a single set in the previous six rounds of this tournament. Not one. Serena's won 21 Grand Slam singles titles, including six Australian Opens. Kerber had never even reached a major final. And Serena had never lost when she got to the final at Melbourne. Never. Kerber, who's 28, was the number seven seed. And get this. She faced a match point all the way back in the first round of the tournament. She joked that she had one leg in the plane back to Germany. I mean, she could have been out in round number one. She survived that match point and then won the whole darn thing. Pulled a major league. A classic movie that was. Amazing run for Kerber. Serena is so dominant, we expect her to win every single set of every single match. She wasn't sharp versus Kerber. 46 unforced errors. I'll say this, Serena showed a ton of class after the match. She was as gracious as could be. She was laughing with Kerber on the court. She talked about how happy she was for Kerber. What a great attitude, how positive Kerber was. It was like they were best friends. So I thought Serena demonstrated a lot of class. Kerber's the first German to win the Australian Open since Steffi Graf in 1994. And speaking of Steffi, Serena remains one major title shy of Graf's open-air record of 22. Serena had a shot to tie Steffi at the U.S. Open. She lost another shocker to Roberta Vinci in the semis. I think Serena's definitely going to pass Steffi's record. It's just a matter of when, not if. By the way, what did you think of Serena's bright yellow outfit? She went with the bare midriff look. A little risque. I wonder what Wimbledon officials would say about that. That ain't going to fly at the All England Club. Unbelievable. And while we're talking about upsets, Saturday night in Philly, and I live about an hour from Philadelphia, the lowly Sixers almost beat the best team in the NBA. Golden State was 43-4, the best record through 47 games since the 1966-67 76ers. We're going back almost 50 years. Now, Golden State beat New York on Sunday, so the Warriors are now 44-4. Philadelphia, 7-41. It has been a dumpster fire for the most part. Jahlil Okafor looks good on the offensive end, a former Duke star. Besides that, the acquisition of Ish Smith has been the second biggest bright spot. And I'm not kidding. Ish Smith. Anywho, the Warriors led this by 24 in the second half. Believe it or not, the Sixers came storming back and tied the game in the final seconds. They were 17-point underdogs, a line that is unheard of in the NBA. And my buddy told me that on the money line, which is just picking a team to win the game, you had to risk $9,000 to win $100 if you took the 76ers. If you took the Golden State Warriors, you had to risk 9,000 to win 100. Is that unbelievable or what? So last possession of the game, Steph Curry passes to Draymond Green out at the foul line. He kicks it to the right corner to Harrison Barnes, who drills a three ball right before the buzzer. 108-105, Golden State holds on. That would have been a monumental upset, like Buster Douglas versus Mike Tyson. And I always say the beauty of sports is there isn't a script. We just never know what's going to happen, and that's what makes it so much fun. Now back to Melbourne for the men's final. No upset special here. Novak Djokovic took care of number 2 seed Andy Murray in straight sets, 6-1, 7-5, 7-6. The Joker won the Australian Open for a record 6th time. He also captured his 11th Grand Slam title, tying Rod Laver and Bjorn Borg. And that's pretty good company. We're talking about two of the all-time greats there. And Djokovic is clearly one of the best ever as well. He's won 3 straight majors for the 2nd time in his career. And he's competing against the likes of Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, and Murray. The Joker's won 21 straight matches in major events. He eliminated Federer in the semifinals and then Murray in the final. And in those 2 matches, he only dropped 1 set. I mean, that is impressive. He is now 3 Grand Slam titles behind Sampras and Nadal, and he's 6 behind Federer, who has the most with 17. But Djokovic, definitely one of the best ever to play the game. So we mix in a little tennis there. Had to talk about that big upset with Serena. And then, yeah, Golden State almost blowing a 24-point lead to the 76ers. Wow. I want your Super Bowl predictions. You heard it here. I am taking Carolina to win the game, but not to cover. 23-20 Panthers over the Broncos. I just think the public's blown up this line. Too many points. Maybe Denver gets a backdoor touchdown to cover, but I just 6 too high for me. So I'm going to take Denver to cover. Your predictions are welcome at the Sports RPT on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT. Enjoy Super Bowl 50, everybody. I'll have a full recap next Monday on the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Talk to you a week on grizzlyproductions.tv.